Hello, I am honored to have today's guest with us. His name is Dr. Mark Pitstick. He is an author. He also has quite a history of medical training. His book is called Soul Proof. He's also written some others, a master's in clinical psychology and a doctor in chiropractic healthcare. He had become aware of his clairaudient experiences when he was about 10. He's worked with people that are suffering and dying adults and children. He wanted to find a sensible, evidence-based answer to the questions that people were asking. Who am I? Why am I here? What happens after I die? Will I see my departed loved ones again? Why is there so much suffering? And he's written a book. This book is called Soul Proof, Compelling Evidence That No One Really Dies. It's a fascinating work because he uses 9 proofs that life continues. You can find information about him at soulproof.com. Welcome, Dr. Mark Pitstick.
Thank you, Tracy. Glad to be here.
The thing that initially intrigued me, as a medium, I do evidentiary medium, which is proving individually, spirit by spirit, to my clients their existence. But there's that larger question of, like, do we continue after life? And some people are afraid to believe in that, and some people want to believe in that, and then some people fear it because of what they might have been taught religiously. Tell us a little bit about that aspect of ourselves.
Well, first of all, it's no longer a question, Tracy. There's just overwhelming proof, and that comes from top-flight doctors, scientists. So the people like Gary Schwartz, PhD, former Yale and Harvard professor, now at the University of Arizona, who, by the way, has done the best research with authentic mediums, showing that indeed they can accurately communicate with disembodied spirits. So Dr. Schwartz says the term death is no longer appropriate. And that's the same conclusion for people like Raymond Moody and Ken Ring and others that I'm close to. We all come upon the same conclusion based on the evidence, as you say, 9 categories of evidence that leave no doubt that life is forever. However, things do change, and that's what we've got caught up with. You know, as we go through life, we go through various changes from being a little baby to puberty and young adulthood and so on. Well, death is just another change, and so we say life is never ending but ever changing. And if we can flow with the changes and realize that a constant sameness would be horribly stagnant.
Absolutely.
Then we can enjoy life and realize there's nothing to fear.
Yeah, as a medium, I've sort of come to the awareness that we kind of phase in and out of body state. And it's interesting because we try so hard to create permanence in our relationships and in our possessions and things that we have here while we're in probably one of the least permanent states of being, the physical state.
Well, I would say in that list, it's true that we can't hold on to the material goods, but we do hold on to relationships, as you know. Those change in nature. For example, when a loved one passes on, we can no longer see their physical body, or at least most of us can't feel their hug, hear their voice, although more and more people are being able to, because I'm not going to say as you know anymore, but I know you know most one must say.
Sure.
Our departed loved ones are right there. They're standing right beside us trying to get through to us. It's just that our 5 senses are so limited for most people that we are only seeing a very small, through a very small pinhole instead of the whole of reality. But people are waking up to this. There's so many great mediums like yourself now coming to the fore, radio shows, books. It's such an exciting time to be alive because so many people are waking up to this greater reality that's always been there, and all the great news that accompanies that.
Well, I appreciated your book, as I said, because it expanded the proofs of existence, of life after death. And you touched gently on the subject of grief earlier. grief is something that I think people experience actually on both sides, because there are those on the other side that didn't get to explain themselves or have an apology to make or have words of love to convey, and not being able to do so creates a grief at them having to step out of body state. I know for sure that it helps people to know that life does continue. What else would you say about the grief process for people in life after death?
Yeah, that whether we're on Earth or somewhere else, consciousness is non-local, meaning there is no distance impediments to being in contact. So we can express forgiveness, whether the person that we are forgiving or need to be forgiven by is alive or dead. So there's no barriers to us in this very moment, just releasing that. Grief, of course, is one of the lower energy emotions, along with discouragement, despair, hatred, bitterness, resentment, etc.
Yes.
So one of the keys is to reach for the highest feeling thought, as people like Esther Hicks teaches, and in each moment. So if we find ourselves, say, grieving or feeling angry about something, then we can just stop and say, "What? How can I upgrade that just a notch?" I'll give you an example. My fiance is an incredible woman, and she has the gift of seeing spirits and energy and so on. So her dad died when she was 3, and her mom kind of went crazy after that and married a also imbalanced guy. So now my fiance Andy has a kind of a deranged mother and stepfather, and her older siblings were out of the house by then, gone away to high school, so it's just her. And she said she remembered when she was 8 years old, she just made the decision that no matter what happened, and there was significant abuse and so on that went on, she was always going to find a positive. She was going to focus on the positive. There were 99 bad or sad things. She was going to focus on the one happy one. And she gave an example of one Christmas morning. It was pretty sad and lonely and so on and bizarre at her house on Christmas morning. She felt the sadness and, you know, just like, this isn't fair, coming in on her. And she said, tell you what, I'm going to focus on, I know some of my friends right now have really happy families. And so right now they're opening their presents and they're having such a great time. I'm going to be happy for them. I want to feel the joy for them.
Oh, what a great soul. What a high soul.
Well, and we all can do that. It's just a matter of practicing, and everyone can do that.
Yes. Yeah, I think of it as energy follows focus. And I like, I also admire what Abraham Hicks, through Esther, brought through about those steps of bringing yourself subtly, because I think it's a high contrast sometimes for people, you know, to go from grief to joy is just too large of an increment for them. So, you know, being able to take things step by step.
Yeah, even if it's, well, someday I will see them again when I pass on. Well, that's a big step up from I lost them, I'll never see them again.
So yes.
People can do. I got an email this morning. I was on the George Norrie show last week, Coast to Coast.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, what a reach that show has. I mean, getting letters from people literally from all around the world. And so this morning a mother said her only child, a 2-month-old baby, became ill. She took it really ill, diarrhea and fever and vomiting, and took it to the hospital. Hospital said there's nothing wrong with her, sent her home. Day or two later, even worse, the mother took her to a doctor. Doctor said, no, nothing I can do. I can't find anything wrong. Day or two later, took another doctor. That doctor finally realized what it was, started treatment, but it was too late. The little one died. Mm-hmm. And the mother said, I don't want to live anymore. She said, she was my whole world. If I find myself going back in time, what if I would have gone to the last doctor first? What if I would have, you know, pressed the hospital and told them there is something wrong with her, and push them to search mm-hmm. more deeply. She said, if that would have happened, my little one would be alive right now. She said, I don't want to live anymore. And my question is, if there's a God, will he forgive me if I commit suicide? And will he let me see my little one when I'm dead?
Oh, how heartbreaking. Yes, I've had similar. Yes. What did you say? What did you give her?
Well, it's a long answer, obviously. But I said, you're at a fork in the road right now, and it's your choice. So one path would be to kill yourself. And certainly no one who has an open heart and mind would blame you. And certainly God and the heavenly host will not judge you or condemn you or anything in hell like that. It's just a bunch of baloney. But there's another way. There's another path. And that is a path that won't be as easy, because day by day you have to go through it. You have to focus on one breath at a time, one step at a time. But this second path will honor your little one's life and death more. And then I shared what you well know about soul contracts and how it's very likely, probable in fact, that the mother soul and the little baby soul designed this for the, I mean, look, we're talking about it on the radio show right now.
Right.
Yeah, and this woman's in a Central American country. So look at the reach already, and I'll be sharing this with my email list and so on. So thousands and thousands of people will hear about this. And that's exactly the kind of reach and blessings and service and growth that comes from such a ostensibly horrible situation. So I point that out to the mother, and how this is a time to reach out for help. There are people who want to help if she'll let them. So it's going to be an ongoing process, but hopefully she hears it and chooses the latter path.
Yes, yes. I was speaking to someone similarly a few weeks back, a client who had lost her son, found her teenage son dead, and just was not handling it well. Just her only desire was to be with him, same, similar thing. And it was interesting because the son came through and started nearly begging her to get angry at him, to shout at him. He said, it's not going to hurt me. Just yell at me and tell me how stupid I was, because it was a drug overdose in this particular case. And you know, how much he wanted her to go through that anger so that she could get into her grief, so she could get into her recovery of things. And I don't recall all the steps. I wrote it down and took a copy for myself so I could contemplate it later. But releasing that is very challenging for people, but that incremental approach, I think that's just, I love what you said about, you know, taking a path that honors their loved one more, you know, that they have that choice, that they do. You know, a lot of people wonder about whether or not there is some type of punishment awaiting them, or, and I think maybe because we're in the body state, you know, we have separateness in this physical world. There's you, there's me, and things happen in this state of being that are beyond our control. You know, our will at a higher soul level is not violated, but our will in this dimension absolutely is. And we sometimes feel like we're being victimized or punished or mistreated by some being, but being part of that being, you know, there's sort of certain laws that exist. Gravity, electricity, you know, death are all part of that system. Was there something else you wanted to add on the topic of grief and healing of that?
Well, you just brought up about six great points, but see, I sat with Raymond Moody and Evan Alexander last year at an afterlife conference in Norfolk, and asked them the question, from everything you've seen and know, does it appear to you that life unfolds in a lawful manner, and that really from a far sufficiently broad perspective, it's unfolding perfectly. And they said, yes, both without a doubt. Eben said that not everyone who has a near-death experience sees this, but certainly those who have a deeper into the primordial light experience see that very clearly. So I think that's so crucial, as you say, for people to realize that even though they may feel like harmless victims, it's very likely that their souls chose to be in that scenario. And God is not asleep at the wheel, and the universe is beautifully set up.
Yes.
Sometimes, people, for example, I mentioned my wife's abusive mother. When her mom died, which was about 2 years ago, it wasn't long before her mom appeared to her. Andy was out in the kitchen getting ready for work. She's an RN, an acupuncturist at a children's hospital, and she looked up, and there's her mom standing there in full body. And her mom said, "I just wanted to let you know that, you know, I appreciate everything you tried to do, and I love you very much, and I'm fine." And her mom was smiling, and Andy realized what we had figured, but it was nice validation that her mom was a contrast spirit. In other words, her mom really wasn't an evil, imbalanced person, soul rather, but her soul took on that kind of horrible persona in order to push Andy, in order to help and teach Andy, and that her soul and Andy's soul and her mom's soul came upon that agreement. So I think when people understand that the universe is more, maybe say, mysterious than we realize, then that helps them take a breath, have faith, even when they don't understand why something's going on. They can say, okay, I don't understand it, but I'm going to trust that there's a rhyme and a reason behind this.
Yes, yes. I love that you use the term contrast spirit. I don't know that I'd heard that before. It's probably in your book. I haven't read the entire thing yet, but am enjoying where I am. But yes, I think that we have soul groups that make deals to come in together, and it's sort of like, okay, who do I trust to help me learn a soul lesson? Well, it would be you. So would you come down and play the role of my mother or my father or my spouse and provide that contrast for me? Because if somebody's going to do it, I'd rather it be you than anyone else. And we make those agreements at that etheric level, and they become written into our life contract. And then, of course, part of our life contract is agreeing to a certain degree of amnesia of who we are and where we came from and who other people in our lives are. But we have those moments of soul recognition, and those lessons have to be taught. And it's very interesting, you know, that sort of Shakespeare's view that all the world's a stage and all its players merely actors. You know, we do play roles. And even Dolly Parton says, you know, sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug.
Yeah, great way to put it. Joseph Campbell wrote so wonderfully about all this, the hero's journey, that actually we each are heroes who come here. I mean, it takes a brave soul to come to a place like Earth, and we should remember that. And I think that's one reason we like plays and movies and books and so on, where it's suspenseful. The hero or heroine goes through a tough time and then emerges victorious, because it reminds us that was our intent for coming here. And that's what I encourage that mother whose little one passed to do, is to find a way to come through this victoriously, and how powerfully she can bless others as a result versus pushing the escape button.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And knowing that our will occurs on those two planes, that her child's soul had agreed to come in for that period of time and for a soul purpose, and at a high soul level achieved that, as she is in the process of achieving her release and her soul purpose being fulfilled now too. That's really
right.
Yeah.
I write a newsletter for a brief parents group called Helping Parents Heal, and their website is helpingparentsheal.info.
Oh.
And the name of the newsletter is Evolved Souls Don't Need Long Earthly Lives. So as you say, these little ones, even though they're little in Earth age, they may be very evolved and advanced, and usually are.
Absolutely.
Soul.
Absolutely. I have encountered that too. And sometimes, though, it can also be someone who was maybe traumatized in a past incarnation, and they're afraid to come in, so they only want to come in for a short period of time. And I've even found people that are children that are growing up in the energy fields, like a child that was aborted or miscarried or passed very young, is still hanging out in the energy field of the parent, growing up beside them quite happily, just not having to deal with the physicality of things. It's always different and always unusual.
And another thing I like to share with grieving people is that their loved ones are not a trillion, billion miles in the sky. And if you were like me, I grew up Lutheran, and I'm 62 years old. Everything was always way up in the sky. God was, heaven was, our departed loved ones were. And now we realize that we each are part of God, as these near-death experiences almost always come back and say,
mm-hmm.
We each are one with the one and part of Source right now. Not maybe someday if we believe a certain way or do certain things. And same way, heaven is a state of consciousness. There are different dimensions, but we can experience heaven wherever we are, or hell wherever we are. It's a state of consciousness, a degree of realization about what is mentioned. We're part of God right now. Our real self cannot be hurt. And so that's a wonderful comfort to people who are grieving, to realize their loved ones are right there, and that's why great mediums like yourself can get in touch with them.
You know, when I was in my 20s, I started reading Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's book. I have the name correct, yes?
Yes.
And you know, her talking about life after death experiences and things, and it was very fascinating to think about that, you know, and I'm finding your book very fascinating too. And I know where I was headed with that. I was like, where was I going with that? I was thinking about like her talking about the different stages of grief with some of the people that you've worked with. What do you see in terms of that progression, and are there things that release people more quickly through. I know you never can have that person back, but I do believe in healing. I do believe that it occurs. What do you think about the stages of grief and what helps accelerate that?
Yeah, obviously she put that on the map for a lot of people, in the five stages of grief, and denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. But what I propose is there's three more steps after that, and I use the acronym ART for. And the first one is appreciation for having that time together. Mm-hmm. And again, the goal is to focus on more high energy emotions instead of...
Yes, I can feel that. I can feel that shift, yes.
Yeah, so appreciation. So on one hand, I think I heard about this first, what was her name? The President Johnson's wife, Lady Bird Johnson, and someone asked her how she felt after her husband died. She said, "It would be ungrateful for me to just focus on missing him when we had so many wonderful years together." And I thought, mm-hmm. What an elegant statement of taking the high road, and that's what we could do. So first of all, appreciation for the wonderful memories, the time we had together, all the love and so on. The R is realization that you'll see each other again. Certainly when the surviving person passes on and has a reunion, but you can experience them right now. And there's an article on my website, soulproof.com, called 12 Keys to Visiting with Your Departed Loved Ones Now.
Oh, beautiful.
And then the T is for transcendence. And that is when you realize those things, your worldview enlarges, and you realize what we've been talking about. They're right there right now. The other thing is that many different cultures recognize that when a close loved one passes, they usually leave behind a spiritual gift. People will notice that, well, you know, this isn't like me, but since my mom died, I've been more patient, almost as if she left that gift behind for us to use and apply.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, those are the next steps I encourage people to consider after going through the five typical ones.
Oh, that's beautiful, because that does take it to a higher level. Appreciation for the time spent together, realization that you will see them again, and transcendence and awareness that there is a benefit that was residual and that will bridge the gap until you see them again.
Yeah, see, there's I'm the director of education for a group called Eternia, and their website is eternia.org. This was started by Edgar Mitchell, the Apollo 14 astronaut who was the sixth man to walk on the moon and had the window seat on the way back and had his revelatory experience. And he's...
Mark, we're headed to the bottom of our hour, so we'll pick that right back up about Eternia when we come back. Anyone that wants to find Mark can find him at soulproof.com and me at mediumtracylockwood.com.
Now, back to our show from a medium's perspective with host Reverend Tracy Lockwood.
Welcome back. If you missed the beginning of this show, we're talking about proof of life continuing after death, grief, the guilt that comes along with losing someone, and how to raise that up to a different level. We're with Mark Pitstick, author of Soul Proof, Radiant Wellness, and the 11 Questions, three wonderful books. And welcome back, Mark. I appreciate this. We were right in the midst of talking about an organization that you thought might be of interest to our listeners called Eternia.org. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we were talking about the higher stages of acceptance after a loved one dies, and the ART acronym and the T standing for transcendence or transformation. And so the point is that as we share in Eternia, so again, that's a group started by Apollo astronaut and MIT scientists Edgar Mitchell, also Evan Alexander and John Audet. Mm-hmm. And so we, with Eternia, I'm the director of education, and we share that what are called STEs, spiritually transformative experiences. And those can occur, one of the most common ways are by near-death experiences, but they also can occur soldiers who are in the middle of war. I got a couple emails after the George Norrie show about from guys who were in Iraq and Afghanistan. They said, yeah, we're in the middle of a firefight, and all of a sudden everything just seemed really bright, and I saw the whole picture. And they said, ever after that, I've been totally different. It's like, wow. I had an awakening.
Yes.
So war can do it. Childbirth, being in horrible fear, having deep joy, basically any really powerful emotion, including the death of a loved one, that expands the mind. So it turns out that about 95% of what our brain does is dampen or filter incoming stimuli. In other words, if we could see, hear, feel everything that exists, it would be overwhelming to us. And it certainly wasn't adaptive evolutionary-wise. You know, in the past, people just had to survive. Well, now that most of us don't have to fight a saber-toothed tiger for lunch, we can relax those brains dampening a bit and experience more of what has always been there. And so, again, that's part of the gift of when a loved one passes on, is it can help us have that spiritually transformative experience, start to see more of life, And then that makes all the difference when we realize these wonderful things we've been talking about, that no one really dies, life is forever, we're one with God, no hell, etc.
And it takes it so far beyond that original model of grief, the five stages of grief, which I think were so critical for people to understand what they were experiencing. I really love that continuation, the art continuation, you know, appreciation for time together, the realization that you'll see them again, and that transcendence and transformation. That's just beautiful. You know, one of the most heart-wrenching situations for people to move through is grief, because if they've lost someone to suicide, what are there any specifics to that process of wondering how someone's doing or helping someone move through something if they've lost someone to suicide? What would you say to them? What would you tell people about suicide and the afterlife?
Sure. Several things. First of all, on my website, soulproof.com, you mentioned, are lots of free articles, free radio shows with all these consciousness experts I interviewed, and so people can learn lots of information. And one of the articles is When a Loved One Dies by Suicide, 12 Things to Know, and so that reviews this. But first and foremost, I tell people that suicide is not a one-way ticket to hell, as some churches teach. Of course, they teach all. Some churches teach all kinds of things that are wrong, and so
yes, absolutely.
For people to let go of that, number one, number two, that to forgive themselves of guilt and blame. You know, so often people will say, "Well, if I would have seen this coming, was it something I did or didn't do? What if I would have done something to catch him?" And that is just not useful at all. I was blessed to be able to hear one of Christopher Reeve's first talks after he was paralyzed. So here he is, paralyzed from the neck down. He can barely speak. And someone asked him, "Do you ever go back to that day when you went horseback riding and wonder, what if I would have left earlier or later or hadn't gone at all?" And he interrupted the questioner, actually, and said, "Never." He said, it just wastes your energy. It puts you into hell. You can't do that. Well, it's the same way when a loved one dies, especially by suicide. So I encourage people to let go of that.
Yes. I want to interject here. This guilt, it's something like very pervasive, because people are very conscientious and they wouldn't have wanted, they would have wanted to be there for that person. They would have wanted to help them, but each of us is on our own soul journey. And I remember I've had some counseling that I've taken in my life, just through different life changes. And I remember one of the sessions that I have was transformative for me, because I was talking about feeling guilty. Like, I think I was talking about feeling guilty about, you know, leaving my now ex-husband. And the counselor really brought me up by my bootstraps. He goes, "You know, guilt is really an inappropriate emotion." And that was just the term inappropriate. It's just like, oh my God, what? Okay. And he said, "Guilt would not be appropriate unless you intended to hurt someone. And then you should be sorry. But if you didn't intend to cause harm, then you have nothing to feel sorry about. You have nothing to feel guilty over." And it was such a splash of cold water in my face, but it really changed how I think about it. And it is a very useless and inappropriate emotion, because it doesn't change anything. It just makes you feel worse. And you wouldn't have hurt that person. You wouldn't have wanted those things for them.
The other thing I share with survivors is that there's two broad categories, and of course there's a whole spectrum, but on one hand, a person who suicides may have been a young soul, and so a young soul is just learning, kind of like a baby who's learning how to walk, and we don't judge the child and they fall down 1,000 times before they can walk. Well, it's the same with young souls. Sometimes these souls will be impulsive on the other side, even though their guides and the spiritual support team are saying, you know, you really shouldn't go into that body. They're like, I can handle it. You know, they've got the bottle.
I know someone like that that's crossed, yes. I'm sorry. I'm not laughing that they committed suicide. I'm laughing because they were so cheeky once they passed.
Yeah, and which one of us hasn't done something? I had this false bravado born of immaturity.
Yes.
And I can handle it, and then they come down, and then maybe they hook up with a imbalanced brain or body, bipolar, and it is overwhelming, and they just can't handle it anymore. And then another group, which would be more evolved souls, I have a very strong sense after having worked with so many over the years that sometimes these old souls who are children, young people, they will have, again, bipolar, depression, etc., and they end their lives. And partly what that's all about was trying to wake up humanity. They're like canaries in a coal mine.
Yes.
Trying to wake up the masses of what we're doing to our air, food, water, all these vaccinations, all these drugs.
Yes.
That are really wiping out the brain, especially for sensitive individuals.
I was just going to say, for people that are highly sensitive, it's just a harsh environment to live in, the physical realm here. Yep.
So you and I understand that, and certainly the ground of all being, the creator and sustainer of all that is, understands that. So
absolutely.
Let go of these archaic and erroneous teachings. That's a slap in the face to God.
Yes, and I can testify after giving, I don't know how many readings I've done, because I think I stopped counting about 1,500 because it was just too OCD to keep up with. But in all of that, no matter whether someone was murdered or committed suicide or whether they were a pedophile or whether they were an enlightened being and the most wonderful parent ever lived, no one is treated with unkindness when they're out of their body. They do kind of sort into a strata, but there's no punishment. There's no something being done to them, because when we're out of body, our will is free. We don't have that compression of wills that we have here in the physical realm. And it is a certain freedom. Before we... We're racing through the time here. Our show ends just about 5 minutes before the hour. And I wanted to go over, because I'm sure people are curious, and we'll see what we can focus on for the rest of the show. But I wanted to bring the 9 proofs that you talk about in your book. And I thought maybe I would list them. And then if there was one in particular that you'd like to focus on, would that be okay with you?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, the 9 are near-death experiences, which most people are aware of. Also, after-death contacts, which might be the most useful one to go over a bit more. There's tons of scientific input, including scientific research, like I mentioned, the research done by Gary Schwartz. And this is double-blind, peer-reviewed, journal-published, replicated studies. He's had magicians, videographers, other scientists observe every aspect of his experiments, and no one can find any flaws in it.
Right.
And yeah, that alone, people weren't aware of this, the scientific research that goes on, and the scientific views of so many great scientists over the years. Miraculous events and revelations, you know, just a person has one miracle and they realize there's so much more to life. Paranormal experiences, in which I grouped authentic mediums, ghost encounters, channeled input, electronic voice projection. I mean, there could have been easily 13 chapters.
Mm-hmm.
Religious and spirituality teachings. Certainly there are grains of truth in every religious teaching, even though there's also a lot that humans added for power and money reasons. But there are those golden threads that Aldous Huxley termed the perennial philosophy. The next, perinatal input, and this is one of the most fascinating ones and one of the least people are aware of, that it's very common for mothers, even before conception, to have visits by the soul that is going to embody their child.
Yes.
Sometimes validation visits. And then oftentimes under hypnosis or spontaneously, the child will start talking. We're talking age 4 or 5, and provide detailed report of what happened while they were in utero or even before they were conceived. So this has been well researched by a group of scientists and doctors. Reincarnation evidence, what I call cyclical life experiences, whole nother area of knowledge. And then finally, what we call first-hand experience and other ways of knowing. Clinical term for that is empirical evidence that is based on first-hand experience. And that's one that no one can argue with you about. You know, once you've had
seen it, know it, can't talk me out of it, it happened. Yes.
Sure. So, like I mentioned, probably after-death contacts, one of the most exciting.
Yeah, curious. What do you mean by after-death contacts?
Yeah, ADCs for short. Raymond Moody said these occur in about 30% of the general population, 66% of widows and widowers, and 75% of bereaved parents have had some sort of meaningful visit by a departed loved one. Now, these can occur while asleep, again, because the brain is more relatively quiet and it's not blocking out what is right there beside them. And
exactly.
So people have very lucid dreams. Some of these, again, have been authenticated. Carl Jung himself had a dream, had a visit from his next-door neighbor in a lucid dream. And so he's saying, well, when I wake up, how do I know this was real and not just a dream? And his neighbor said, well, come over to my house. You've never been in my library, but ask my wife to let you in. And on this section, on this shelf, on this row, is this book by this name, this color. And Jung did the next day as he was instructed, and there was everything just as he was told. So these are dream ADCs, very common. I had a letter from one mother whose son died in Iraq years ago, and she said, I kept having all these very vivid dreams, and also I would see my son, his name was Aaron, through her peripheral vision. And she thought she was going crazy because she had no knowledge about any of this. And then when she read Soul Proof and learned how common they are, she realized he's visiting, he's there to let her know. And then waking ADCs occur in any manner of ways, especially involving electronic instruments, clocks stopping, garage doors going up and down, lights on, off, and so on. It's fairly easy for those who are in pure energy to manipulate electronic devices.
Yeah, because of we are energy. We're energy now, and we're energy then. Oh, that's great. I was wondering if you said that in the paranormal experiences, how would you differentiate that from some of these other categories of proof?
Yeah, that was kind of a catch-all. You know, we wanted to keep a reasonable number, especially for the documentary film. And so if I were to do this over again, I would make mediumistic input a separate category because that has become, I have learned so much more about it. And I mentioned this Helping Parents Heal group for bereaved families. It
yes.
turns out to be one of the number one comforts for these parents. I mean, you can talk about these things till you're blue in the face. But when they have a really hot medium come in and give specific, detailed information that they could not know otherwise, it's like the movie, if you remember the movie Ghost with Whoopi Goldberg.
Yes.
Swayze, and that moment where Demi Moore realized that her departed loved one was indeed right there, and she just had an awakening, and the same with these children. But in the book, the way it is, the paranormal covers a number of different topics that fit in that category.
Yeah. I just was pretty impressed that you had taken the time and focus to categorize these proofs. You know, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you know, usually I'm focused on how do I prove that I'm talking to somebody. You know, and it's so varied, you know, it's not always name and address and phone number, it's mannerisms and gesticulations and speech patterns and little random bits of knowledge or symbology that I would have no way of knowing, and sometimes doesn't make a lick of sense to me at all, but makes perfect sense to my clients. And I just kind of wanted to go over them again. You had after death contacts, which are the ones where people come through dreams or through like waking moments where they kind of catch a glimpse or have something altered around them, near death experiences, the occurrence of miracles and revelations and angelic input. Science itself, which is just, it seems like every time I turn around, there's another scientific proof that's, you know, showing or an aspect of what I've experienced in that interface with the other world, now becoming sort of like, oh yeah, of course, when two people think of each other, there's a channel of information. I wish I could remember what science that came from, but I heard it the other day. It opens up between people, paranormal experience and religion, are the histories of religion and spirituality that are from the dawn of time. This isn't something new. And you talked about the perinatal experiences and evidence, reincarnation, that I like the term cyclical life experience. That was great. And firsthand experience, all of those weave together to provide a very confident basket for someone to put their AKA beliefs in. I always find it a little odd when someone, you know, calls it a belief system, because it is not a belief system for me. It's an evidential thing. And your book is just precious and beautifully structured and well written for the parts that I've been able to read. And I don't read a lot of books. So if you're interested in finding Mark Pitstick's book, it's called Soul, S-O-U-L, Proof. And you can, I'm sure, find that at soulproof.com and probably on Amazon and other places. Mark, thank you so much. Is there anything else you wanted to throw in the hat right before we close the show here?
I'd encourage people to share this with others, to have discussion groups. As you mentioned, there are lots of CDs on there, Transformational Breathwork, Ask Your Soul Under Hypnosis. So ways to convert this from just intellectual knowledge to a deep knowing, so that you're able to let your light shine brightly no matter what's going on around you.
And for those that don't know what transformational breath work is, can you just encapsulate that?
Sure.
For
40
us?
Minutes of deep, diaphragmatic, noisy breathing. Cultures across time have used different ways of breathing, and in this case, it's designed to release old wounds, recollect stuck energy from past events, and then remember more deeply than ever before who you are, why you're here, who always walks beside you.
In a large sense.
Why you as a soul came here.
Yes, and you do past life regressions as well?
With groups.
With groups, okay. Well, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. I really appreciate your being here. And again, if you want to reach Mark Pitstick, you can find him at soulproof.com. If you'd like to listen to past episodes of this show, they're available on YouTube and on my website at mediumtracylockwood.com. Again, if you would like to find me, you can find me at mediumtracylockwood.com or friend me on Facebook at Psychic Medium Tracy Lockwood. I will see you next week for a view of life from a medium's perspective. And remember, it's never inappropriate to be kind. And without integrity, you have nothing.